is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives.
Okay, the switchboard's gone crazy, so let's do it the old-fashioned way. It's time for the Conscious Parenting Show with Sandra Jones Keller and family. Let's bring them on to reintroduce themselves, the show, and what's up for today. Welcome back, guys.
Oh, thank you. We are so happy to be here. I am Sandra Jones Keller, Conscious Parenting Coach and an author. Joining me today are my husband, Thomas, and our 18-year-old daughter, Mecca. Say hello, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
So we are broadcasting live on News for the Soul Radio. Email your questions to ontheair@telus.net or call in to 646-595-4274. We are here to answer your conscious parenting questions. Maybe you have something you want to know about discipline or bedtime or tantrums. Whatever's on your mind, we'll do our best to answer it. So we have an interesting topic today, Thomas.
One of my favorites.
So today we're going to be talking about trusting your instincts, and this is based on my story, Don't Wake Me Up to Eat, in Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid. So we were actually just going to start with a conversation, but you wanted to read the first paragraph of the story because you liked it. So.
Yeah, this is in Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid. It's on page 36. It's, the title of the story is Don't Wake Me Up to Eat. And it starts like this. Have you ever been chewed out by a newborn? It's actually quite jarring, to say the least. Wah, 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 in high-pitched screams, followed by unsteady breathing, hiccuping, and more wah.
And that was our introduction to parenthood.
Yes. That's right after the birth, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And so we're talking about learning to trust your instincts. And this story is
actually a little more than that.
Well, it's not more than that, but we're going to kind of start with the story and then how that led to us learning to trust our parenting instincts.
Right.
So we were first-time parents. I had a planned C-section in the hospital, so we're very fortunate to have a whole suite. And so understand that I had intuitive two-way communication with Mecca before she was born, so she literally guided me through my high-risk pregnancy.
Right.
My experience of her was she was intelligent, she was a sentient being, she was calm and collected. So I'd already connected with her. So what was your experience? It wasn't quite the same experience, but what experience did you have?
Wasn't she just pretty much communicating one sentence to you every time you checked in?
Yeah, I'm fine, mommy.
Take care of yourself.
Yes. Yes, but it was very profound at the time because I would ask a lot of questions, but yes. So it was a lot of sentences, maybe a couple, but yes, it was mostly I'm fine, mom, take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your experience?
Of which part now?
Of Mecca before she was born. Just, you know.
Oh, I didn't have any intuitive communication like you did, any two-way intuitive communication. I did have one experience while you were pregnant with her, and I was in Egypt, and we were doing a breathing in the King's Chamber, and where she came up inside of me and, in essence, looked around the room at just 20 or 30 people, and then went back to where she came.
So we both had experience with her.
Mystical, yes.
Mystical spirit. So we're in the hospital, and we're new parents, we're first-time parents, so we didn't really know what we were doing.
Yeah, but we weren't young and dumb.
No, we weren't young and dumb, but we didn't know what we were doing in terms of that. In terms of how to take care of a newborn, especially in the hospital after surgery.
Absolutely.
So we really felt like we, needed the advice of the nurse and doctors, which we did to a certain extent. So do you want to tell them what happened with her, or you want me to tell them what happened about the feeding?
Go ahead. Yes. Go ahead.
The nurse comes in. I think this must have been the first one.
Oh, tell them to email in questions.
You just tell me. Just email your questions to ontheair@telus.net or call in to 646-595-4274.
Okay, on with the story.
You just messed up my whole rhythm here. So it's the first night. The nurse comes in and says, you need to feed the baby every 2 to 3 hours. And so at first it sounded logical, and then I said, or you said, well, what if she's sleepy? And the nurse said, well, wake her up. You know, they need to eat every 2 to 3 hours. So it kind of sounded reasonable, but, you know, I don't know. That didn't quite feel right. And so middle of the night, you know, we were kind of watching the clock,
mm-hmm.
2 to 3 hours. Mecca was, oh, my gosh. She was sleeping peacefully, happy as a little camper. And then what happened?
Then we woke her up.
Well, not we, you.
Was it me? I woke her up to feed her, like the nurse said, and it was release the banshees. She was screaming and so unhappy about being woke up.
Yeah, you know, she'd been sleeping peacefully, so Thomas wakes her up, brings her over to me in the room to breastfeed. She was not interested in eating. She cried. I mean, this was not just crying. She was screaming the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It took us probably a half hour to calm her down and finally get her back to sleep.
So picture this. We were traumatized by our baby.
So we finally get her back to sleep. Now, she did not eat at all. And so we get her back to sleep, and I was like, what the heck? I am not doing that again. So the nurse comes in the morning and says, when Mecca was awake, I fed her for as long as she wanted, as much as she wanted. She was eating fine.
Mm-hmm.
So the nurse comes in and says, oh, so when was the last time the baby ate? And we look at each other, and it's like, we woke her up in the middle of the night, and she screamed. And the nurse says, well, it's okay if they scream, they need to eat.
Yeah, but we woke her up, and she screamed and
didn't eat
and just screamed some more until we left her alone.
So we're trying to explain to the nurse what happened, and the nurse was not interested. And
she was quite robotic.
We started acting like we were teenagers trying to get out of trouble. It was like, okay, well, what are we going to say? Because I'm not doing that again.
Right.
And so we literally had to work out how to be evasive in our feeding. Because, like I said, so I had intuitive communication with my daughter. I knew that she was this intelligent being. And my instincts told me that if she was hungry, she would wake up and eat. And then that whole experience showed us that we were right on track.
And I always felt before that and during her baby time that she has an innate intelligence built into her that tells her when to eat,
mm-hmm.
and when not to eat, and that's just it. I trusted that and relied on that. They are not born morons.
Right.
They actually have an innate intelligence. And guess what? Babies have been born for thousands of years before this two-hour mandatory feeding was ever instituted.
And so we were interrupting her natural cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So someone said that, you know, we needed to do this. We tried it. We were trying to be dutiful parents, so we tried it. And we saw the results. And we saw that it was completely disruptive to her cycle.
Yes.
And so we decided not to do that. And so that was the beginning of us learning to trust our parenting instincts.
Right.
Okay, so you had some information that you wanted to share about that whole feeding cycle that you said.
Well, I hadn't read the story until today in quite some time. So I reread it, and then I wondered, when did this two-hour baby feeding mandatory overnight philosophy be installed. And I couldn't find any research that showed when it was installed. Every site on parenting and baby care, except for one, was saying it's mandatory. Every 2 to 3 hours, it's mandatory. You know, and...
So did they say why it was mandatory, though?
No, they didn't say why it was mandatory. They said if your baby loses some weight after birth and in the first couple of days, that's normal. And so they didn't say why or anything else or why you got to feed them every 2 hours. But a couple of the natural sites said the babies typically eat every 2 to 3 hours and they need quite a bit of food for nutrition, excuse me. And all of that sounds fine and makes sense. And even there, this child, as every child, has an innate mm-hmm. intelligence that guides them when they don't have language mm-hmm. skills yet on how to live and thrive. And that's what I trust, that the innate intelligence.
And so we are not suggesting anyone go against the doctors. That's not what this conversation is about. This conversation is about learning to trust our child's cues and learning to trust our parenting instincts. Because even when the nurse said that, like there was something inside of me that didn't feel quite right. It was, okay, that sounds logical,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't feel right, and I'm going to try this,
mm-hmm.
which we did,
right.
and I tried it, and then based on our child's response, we could see that this was not right for her.
Yeah, right. Okay, now I want to give props to this one website that wasn't just repeating a standard thought pattern. It actually is called kidshealth.org, and they write in the first paragraph about mandatory feeding every 2 hours. In the first few weeks of life, breastfeeding should be, quote, unquote, on demand
mm-hmm.
when your baby is hungry, which is typically about every 1.5 to 3 hours. But there's a wide range of time frames depending on the child.
Mm-hmm.
So that was only one of about 20 sites that wasn't just touting a belief system that probably was set up to prevent some newborns from dying.
Malnutrition,
and that would be horrible. But when you apply something like that across the board and then generations go by where nobody looks deeper into it, then it just becomes robotic mechanics with no thoughts given to it, no insights, no updating.
Yeah, and like I said, so because Mecca was eating.
Yes, and she was eating.
She was eating very well. I fed her as much as she wanted, whenever she wanted.
She looked very healthy.
She was thriving. She was healthy. She was robust. We weren't concerned about it because we looked at her, and she was sleeping very well. She would sleep.
Mm-hmm.
She would wake up and eat and do her business, go back to sleep. Like all on her own natural, actually, it's kind of like she does now.
Well, that's a larger question, which we're going to get to as well, because that is very important. That's a very important point.
Yeah.
That's the birthing of self-regulation.
It is. Little did we know that following our instincts in the first day of her birth
mm-hmm.
was the beginning of trusting her to self-regulate.
Yes. And it's had incredible consequences. She's now 18 years old. You want me to get into any of the consequences I've observed?
Sure, go ahead.
One of the things that I love most is that since we never force-fed her, in essence, she has always known when she was hungry, naturally. Because when you force-feed them every 2 hours, the body adapts to it in that way. And so if you force feed them for a certain length of time and then you stop it, the body is going to be messed up. Yeah. So they lose that natural intuitive regulation.
Yeah.
But as I was going to say, because we never force fed her every 2 hours. We trusted that. And as she grew up, I never said,
finish your plate.
Clean your plate. You must clean your plate. I'm as I grew up hearing from my parents, clean your plate or else.
Yeah.
You know, and we did, but she never did because we never said that. And what I've observed is she knows when to stop eating naturally.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't base her eating on whether a plate is clean or not. She bases it on how she feels internally. And her weight has never varied too much. And she's always been very healthy. And she can stop. And so I would stop eating when she wants. And I was thinking about that. Where does that "you must clean your plate" even comes from? And honestly, I think it comes from the parents having a either a poverty type consciousness where I paid for this food,
right.
You got to eat every bit of it. There's starving children in China. That's what I heard growing
up. That's what I heard.
Or somebody has put their heart and soul and energy into cooking it, like a mom or a dad, and they want their child to eat it because, doggone it, I put all this energy into cooking it. But neither of those have anything to do with the child's innate intelligence and letting them regulate themselves really.
Absolutely. Mecca, how do people reach us with their questions?
You can email your questions to ontheair@telus.net or call in to 646-595-4274.
Thank you.
So anyhow, we went to, how many days were we in the hospital?
Oh, just three.
We were there 3 days, and we became very efficient at avoiding direct answers to the nurses who came in and said, "Have you fed her every 2 hours?"
We're not suggesting you lie to your nurses or anything like that. We are just telling our story.
And you got to work it out for yourself. We're not, like my wife said, we're not saying you must do this or that.
And so for me, especially as a new parent at the time, that was the beginning of me trusting my parenting instincts.
Okay.
Because, you know, the nurses and the doctors knew way more about this process from a medical standpoint. But they did not know way more about me and my relationship to my child and the connection that we had and listening and following her cues.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to have this conversation on air about following your instincts. And I'm going to use instincts and intuition interchangeably during this conversation. But, you know, mother's intuition is very powerful. And sometimes we are told things to do for our children that don't feel right for us.
Yet they put a lot of pressure
on us. Yeah, they put a lot of pressure
on us
sometimes.
And it's hard to know which way is the way to go by the
And so how? So what do you do? And so for me, because I am an energy healer, I am in touch with energy, but I was thinking, okay, so what can I leave people with? And I would say to develop your intuition, which everyone has, and we all receive these little hints and these little whispers, to start following that for yourself so that you can build a muscle, so that you can build trust that what you're actually receiving is from your higher self. And then that will give you more faith when dealing with your child.
Yes.
To know that, okay, I've been told this, and it doesn't feel right, and I'm doing it, and my child doesn't seem to be responding right, so let me consider maybe there's a different way,
mm-hmm.
or there's something else
mm-hmm.
To be done. Because I was told, you know, things, I mean, I remember the doctor told me, it's like, you know, you breastfeed for 6 months, and then you introduce food, and then you do this. Well, I went to my, you know, natural site, and I ended up breastfeeding exclusively for 12 months.
Okay.
So I didn't introduce any food for 12 months, and then I did homemade organic food for another 7-8 months.
Okay.
But when the doctor found out that I was still breastfeeding, they were kind of upset. They're like, you know, what are you doing? And I had to explain, well, this is kind of what I read in the more natural forum,
mm-hmm.
and this is what's working for me, because if you look at my child, she's vibrant and healthy and juicy, you know, mm-hmm. so, you know, yeah. so it's like, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes to follow your instincts, follow your intuition when you're being bombarded with all of this information.
Yeah, and if you are in fear, it's almost impossible to hear or feel your own intuition, which makes the whole ordeal much more challenging because they will give you dire consequences if you don't follow their instructions to the T.
Yeah. And so, Mecca, how do they reach us again?
You can email your questions to ontheair@telus.net or call in to 646-595-4274.
Okay, and so I wanted to kind of segue, because we're talking about following your intuition, following, you know, information from the higher source, your guides. And so we've been talking to Mecca about that. Hold on, we have some questions.
Just take this on these tiny texts. You mm-hmm. read it, because I can't see it clearly.
Tanya in New Jersey. I can't figure out how to avoid the control power play situation, and I can't just let my kids run around doing whatever they want. I'm really struggling with this, so any advice you have for me would be greatly appreciated. So control power play.
Control power play situation.
So, Tanya, I don't know how old your kids are. You didn't say that, but that's okay.
Yeah, that has something to do with it, though.
It does. So control power play situation. I can't let this one. So conscious parenting, and I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing your name incorrectly. I'm going to say Tanya, is not about letting your kids do whatever they want.
Of course not. That's
this is not permissive parenting. So conscious parenting, for me, and then I'll kind of give my definition, but you'll talk about yours, and then we'll weave it together in an answer for Tanya.
Okay.
So conscious parenting, for me, has always been recognizing my daughter as a spiritual being, first and foremost, with her own divine path, with her own purpose in life. And so that recognition right there changes how I parent and how I look at her. She's not my possession. She didn't come here because I wanted to be a mom. It's like she's this divine being. And so with that in mind, then, I treat her as a divine being. And so that doesn't mean, yes, I get caught up in the day-to-day stuff. So what does that mean, Tanya? That my purpose is to be a way shower for her. And so I have found when I have an agenda or I'm trying to push my will onto her, that's when there becomes a quote-unquote power play because I am pushing an agenda on her. And so I invite you then to kind of step back and see where this power play is coming from and what it is specifically, and if it's towards something that maybe does not apply to your kids. So I kind of need specifics. But for example, power play.
Well, let me interrupt.
Okay, go ahead.
And we have never let our child just do whatever she wanted what she wanted to do would actually harm anybody, of course, or even be mean or cruel to anybody,
mm-hmm.
or we wouldn't ever let ourselves do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always been consequences for whatever she chooses to do. And so if I say she's 18 now, so it's a whole different game, but if she was much younger and I say, no, you can't do that for this reason, then that's it. You just can't do that. And if you do that, then there's going to be the consequences of something being taken away for a while or a timeout or...
Well, come on. We never did timeout.
Well, she didn't call for it.
Well, because we were very clear, though.
Yes.
Because, so when you talk about power plays. So when I was being raised.
Hold on.
Okay, so power. When I was being raised, my parents often said no with like no rhyme, like with no explanation.
Right.
It was no from something like my dad would say no because he was afraid I was going to do X, Y, and Z, which I wasn't even thinking about doing. But so he was parenting from his guilt of what he had done,
right,
trying to keep me from doing whatever this is. So then when you're parenting from guilt,
right,
you create a mess.
Absolutely.
Because you're guilty about something, so you're trying to control something or you're trying to prevent something.
And that's the very thing you will create. Yeah.
And so when it's a no for Mecca, it's like we really talk about and look at why it's a no. You know, and is this coming from something that I had in my past, or is it because this situation doesn't warrant her doing that? For example, she thought she wanted to get her driver's license before she had this. We were doing a teen driver challenge, and she didn't want to be the oldest one there with a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, well, no, because you're not ready to drive.
Right.
And so we explained why it was a no. And it was a no because that was not for her highest and greatest good.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know what you're going to say.
Okay. Let me give you a good example of when our daughter was much younger, and she was in the seat, in the back seat, whatever they call that seat.
The car seat.
The car seat. She went through a phase where she would throw one of her shoes up over at either myself or my wife when she was driving. And she went through that phase, and I'm sure I told her a couple of times, no, knock it off. Don't do that anymore. That's not permitted. And then she continued to do it, so I threw the other shoe out the window and told her, you're not getting any more.
I threw the shoe out the window.
We both ended up throwing a pair of her shoes out the window.
Oh, you threw the shoe out too?
And we did not replace those.
Yeah.
As we told her that very clearly, if you do this, this is the consequence of what's going to happen.
And so she kept throwing the shoe, and she thought it was funny. It was like, you know, she was three, and I guess for a three-year-old, seeing me scream while I'm driving down the freeway was very funny, until I threw the shoe out the window. Like you said, we did not replace it, and that
stopped real quick.
Yeah. So I think, you know, you want to be creative. Like I said, Tanya, I don't know the age of your children or what you're going through. And then we talk about universal laws.
Mm-hmm.
So the law of mentalism.
Mm-hmm.
Everything starts with a thought. So what is going on in the house? What's going on with you? Because if there's dissension in the house, it's going to trickle right down to the kids because they are sponges. And so we talk about universal laws. So think of the golden rule. The golden rule. Do as to others as you would do, as you want them to do for yourself. So, for example, we didn't talk about, oh, don't steal because it's bad. It's like, you know, if you steal, you will be stolen from.
Yeah.
If you lie, you will be lied to.
Yeah.
If you're mean to people, people will be mean to you.
Mm-hmm.
So then that way we link her behavior to her experience of life. So, yes, there are consequences, but it's, you know, you're creating that. So you may do stuff that we may never know about, but it's still in your energy field. It's still in your consciousness, and then you're going to attract that back to you.
Well said.
So
touché.
I remember, you know, one time I had done something kind of sketchy. I had given a website, like a free link to a website of a project that I was working on, and I did not feel good about it. And I think Mecca had actually heard me. And then I tell you, within 2 days, like I had an incident where I felt Mecca was being like kind of cryptic and sneaky and stuff. And so I had to look at what was the energy, and then I recognized that I had done something that I felt sneaky and sketchy about. So I did my forgiveness work in myself,
mm-hmm.
and then I talked to her about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I had done something, and so it was in my energy field, And so, sure enough,
that's the come around.
That's the come around. I find her doing something which I found kind of, questionable. So we clean up ourselves. So conscious parenting, I clean up myself.
Mm-hmm.
My kids are cleaned up automatically through my actions.
I want to read the next one.
Okay,
Bella in New York, Becca in New York. I love the name. Becca. My question focuses more on the parents themselves. I want to be a conscious, empowering force in my life. My husband has an older school approach that I am not a fan of. How do we solve this when we are coming from different places? Great question. No, I'm going to answer first. I heard that inhaling. I love this because this is a perfect segue from what Sandra was just saying to Tanya?
Becca. Okay, yeah, that's Tanya.
This is for Becca. Everybody, I'm going to talk about something called mirroring, which is just a simple, clear word for what Sandra was just describing. Everybody in our life, our spouse, our children, our in-laws, our friends, are all reflections of our own consciousness. Everyone in our life is a reflection or a mirror of our own consciousness. A lot of the things we see from the people around us are wonderful, and that's a great reflection of our consciousness. A lot of the things are neutral, and that's okay. It's still our consciousness. And some of the things are not so great, and we don't like them. We just flat out don't like it. That's a reflection of our consciousness as well. So what do we do when we don't like something that somebody is reflecting to us? Well, we use the mirror to reflect it to us. Then we say to ourselves, where am I doing that same thing? And if I'm not doing it physically out in the world, where am I doing it in my mind, just in my thoughts? And then work out how to forgive yourself for that thought. So let's say someone in my sphere is gossiping all of a sudden where they never gossiped before, and I'm disturbed by it. Well, then I got to look into myself and ask myself, where am I gossiping, talking poorly about other people? And then once I find that, then I do forgive that in myself. The energy dissipates, and the other person just changes without a word ever being said to them. So might I suggest, as hard as it is to hear, that your husband is showing you a part of your own consciousness. You have a bit of a split consciousness. Mm-hmm. You want to be a conscious, empowering force, yet you still got a little bit of the old school approach in you. And that's the conflicting parts of your own consciousness your husband is reflecting to you. So if you can find that in yourself, and own that part of yourself, and then forgive that energy, your husband's going to change.
That was a great explanation. I actually have an example, Becca. So it's not this. So, did this just happen yesterday? It was the day before, between you and I. So, it was yesterday. So I was sharing with you a story. So this is what happens when you have kind of two, quote-unquote, conscious people in the house. So I was sharing a story with you. Yes,
it's not going to look good for me, I don't think.
It's not as bad as some of them. So I was sharing a story with you. And I was just sharing, and you were so concerned about me being lawful. I mean, I couldn't even get my story out because you kept saying, that's what you just did. That's a mirror of you. And so I got so annoyed with him, because he wouldn't just let me share my story. And if I'm honest, I know that he has shared stories with me. And in my head, I'm thinking, boy, that's exactly what you do. So maybe I don't say it out loud and interrupt like you do me.
Yes.
But I was thinking it.
Yep.
And so when you did that to me, I was like, wow, that is so annoying, because I couldn't even, have a moment with you without you being a drill sergeant. And so my work then was to recognize that sometimes I do that too, where I'm so interested in trying to get you to see a point or correcting something that I am just, not even being with you. you weren't being with me at all because you were just so,
yes,
you know, fixated on me getting the point.
I did not want you to miss this golden opportunity to heal and transform.
And I had noticed it the first time, but for some reason you felt the need to repeat it 3 or 4 more times.
Well, that's the other thing. That's another thing, Becca. Your husband's going to continue this forever until you nail this in yourself and forgive it.
Yeah.
Not meaning to yell at you. It's just hard to hear.
I was annoyed with you, but I also recognized that I do the same thing. So then my forgiveness work is not judging you and not being so keen on trying to correct you or get you to see a point, but just be with you and listen. Because we've been doing this work for a long time, and
yes,
so I know that as I forgive my stuff, you will also forgive. And we're both on a conscious path, so you'll get it, or maybe you could have said it once.
Mm-hmm.
Because I said, you know, when you said it the first time, I said, yeah, okay, I see that. But that wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we forgive ourselves, then I can actually have a conversation with you that maybe not be the most lawful, but just like have a conversation.
Right, exactly.
So
wait a minute now. Just one last comment for Becca, because that's a beautiful topic. And if your husband is listening right now, please be careful not to get smug by our answers for your wife, because that is going to come back and hit you.
Yeah, every time you say talk about how nice you are, then something happens.
That's right.
It's like, you are not that nice. Thank you, Becca in New York. Thank you, Tanya in New Jersey. Sheila in Arizona. I'm glad you brought up the concept of waking a sleeping baby. That never felt right to me either. My challenge is more about getting my kids to go to bed early. Kids seem to stay up later than when I was as a kid. I'd be feeling better if they were getting more sleep, though. How did you handle bedtime management? That is a great question, because in my book, Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid, there is a story called a bedtime alarm. So at 2 years old, our daughter stopped taking naps. At 4 years old, she was getting out of bed after I put her to bed because she wasn't tired, and we were going through this struggle. So how we handled it, so granted, we are homeschoolers, so we have a lot more flexibility, but she was 4 at the time. So the solution that I came up with, which actually it worked very well for us, so I looked at her kind of natural cycle, and I looked at how much sleep she needed, like if she went undisturbed. And I think at that time it was like maybe 9 to 10 hours or something, like if she went undisturbed. So what I started doing, and Thomas had to get on board with this, but he wasn't dealing with the nighttime drama. So
I can tell you my version afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good.
So what I came up with was a bedtime alarm. So I generally go to bed around 12:45 a.m. No, around 1 o'clock. So what I did was at 12:45, this, and she was 4, mind you, she was 4 at the time. What I did was I recognized trying to get her to bed early wasn't working because that was not her natural cycle at all, and no one was happy about it. So I would set, so she would set her alarm at 12:45 a.m. I would put her to bed, or we would do story time and, you know, do all that, probably around 9. And then I would go into my office, which was literally right across the hall at the time, and I would do my thing. And so at 12:45, I'd hear her alarm go off, and all of a sudden she was brushing her teeth, putting away her stuff, and she was in bed by 1 a.m. And then she would sleep for as long as she needed to sleep, unless we had a field trip, and I told her, you know, we're going someplace in the morning, so you need to be up by here. And that actually worked very well for us. When we didn't have any place to go, she would sleep as long as she wanted. When we did have places to go, she learned. So this was her self-regulating. She learned that if she needed more sleep, she'd have to go to bed a little earlier. She learned how to entertain herself at 4, because just because she wanted to stay up didn't mean I was going to be on mommy duty the whole night. So she learned how to entertain herself, And there was no electronics. So she was four.
Mm-hmm.
So it was no electronics. It's like you can play with your dolls. You can color. Mm-hmm. You can look at your books.
You cannot stare at the screen.
Yeah, you cannot stare. You can, you know, do your puzzles, create whatever you want, but you're not going to stare at a screen.
Yeah.
A screen. So that's how we handled it. Like I said, it's called A Bedtime Alarm in my Tips and Tricks of Parenting a New Age Kid book. That worked very well for us. Now, Thomas, what's your version?
Well, my version is exactly what you said. I just wanted to say that we all may still have a little bit of old school in us. I know when this thing about Mecca staying up till 1 a.m. came out, I was the one who took the old school position.
Yep.
But I realize old school is just like only going back to when I grew up. And I grew up, you know, I was going to bed whenever my parents said I was going to bed. I don't know what it was. Sometimes before the sun went down, it seemed like, but it was early. But we all have these natural circadian rhythms in our bodies, and some of us stay up late at night naturally, and some of us stay up or wake up early in the morning naturally. I'm an early riser naturally. My wife and daughter are late risers or late going to bed. So if we can keep in line with our if we have room to flex our own particular schedules, matching our circadian rhythms, we stay in touch with our body, mind, and spirit a lot more easily. So because we homeschool, we had the advantage of having the freedom of how the curriculum started and stopped during the day. And so I had to wrap my mind around it and change the way I was thinking. From old school.
Yeah, because your initial reaction was, oh, no, we're not doing that.
Yes.
And I said, okay, then you can stay up and manage getting her to bed.
And that's what you call reconsidering very quickly.
Yeah, you
should. Since I'm in bed at 10 p.m.
Yeah, you were in bed by 10, and the drama would start about 10:15.
Yeah, so it's like letting the gates loose at the zoo during the night.
Yeah, so, yeah, I just said, okay, that is fine. Then you're going to wrangle her to bed, and you quickly changed your mind.
I got on board real fast.
And so Sheila in Arizona, so that was my solution. And it worked very well for us. And like I said, it was the beginning of following her natural cues, following her rhythm, and teaching her how to self-regulate. Because, you know, as parents, I don't think I need to be a military. You know, that's not my job. And so I find solutions that will help alleviate a lot of the frustration and the pushback. So thank you, Sheila, in Arizona. And Mecca, how do they reach us?
You can email your questions to ontheair@telus.net or call in to 646-595-4274.
Okay, you want to read Jamie in Chicago?
Yes, let's move on to Jamie in Chicago. My daughter is in her teens now, and I'm so worried about keeping her safe now that she's asking about dating. Bingo! You hit a golden one right there. My daughter's 18 now. How do I set healthy boundaries without creating control and oppositional reactions to those boundaries?
You know, so do you want to,
you can start.
You know, so like I said, we're in a homeschool world, so it's very different. So as homeschoolers, we're used to doing things with the family.
Well,
we all know each other. Okay, go ahead.
Because we're here talking about conscious parenting, and we just talked about mirroring. And we just talked about bringing your past and trying to change your past for your child by changing your...
Okay, so go ahead.
So if you're so worried about keeping her safe, there's probably some forgiveness work you need to do on your own consciousness, in your own mind, about the dangers out there. Because if you don't handle that first, that fear is going to create that very danger taking place in the physical world. So say something that you're the mother.
No, I like what you said, because, you know, as parents, you know, absolutely, you know, I want to keep my daughter safe, and I don't want to project something into her consciousness that's not even there.
That's it. That's the nail on the head.
You know, so me being terrified, it's like, you know, parents that complain about how anxious they are, all the anxiety, and then their kids become anxious and anxiety-ridden
mm-hmm.
because that's what was in the space.
Yes.
So, you know, I like what you said, Thomas. So, you know, keeping them safe is really cleaning up our consciousness.
Yes, and the world is a safe place when it's a safe place in my consciousness. Because my consciousness is what projects out into the world, the physical world, literally. So if I'm clean internally, then it's going to be clean out there, and it's not a scary place. So go
and
ahead.
So, and then, yes, I agree with it. And then, like, you know, in practical terms, make your home safe and welcoming so that your child feels comfortable bringing their friends over, bringing a potential dating partner, or like get to know the people in your child's life
yes.
as much as possible. Then that way you will feel more comfortable. And, you know, what we've always talked to, you know, Mecca about is trusting her instincts, following her own internal guidance. Like if something doesn't feel right, get out. Don't do it. And so, Mecca, I want you to talk just a little bit about how you ran into an old friend and what that felt like for you. Because we're talking about keeping safe, and I want to show that, you know, our kids, when they're grounded, when they have an environment, can feel internally. So share your story about that.
Well, even before we ran into her, like, I didn't really like being around her because her energy is weird. So, like, when I ran into her, she was very nice, you know, very, she greeted us, she gave us samples, she was very, very nice. But, like, there was just something a little bit off about her, and there's always been something a little off. So even mm-hmm. though the interaction was, you know, normal and there was nothing wrong, the energy was still not, like, comforting. I wasn't, like, settled or,
mm-hmm.
like, yeah.
And so what does that, like, tell you about you? Like, do you trust that, like, when you feel that?
Yeah.
So say a little more. Like, so when you feel that about a person, what do?
Not be around them.
Mm-hmm.
Other people.
I'd say you've been always been very clear and strong in that feeling and the way you behave. I commend you in it. I know that it took me decades to begin to trust my intuition in that way. I remember we had some friends over from the neighborhood, and
yeah.
I was hanging out on the backyard barbecue with the man. And it always just felt off and awkward and weird, but I was telling myself on the surface level, come on, man, just hang out with this guy, have some fun, stay loose. Maybe it's my problem, loosen up and stuff. And we're in a month or two later, we found out that this guy was up to some serious riffraff, and then I attribute that back to why I couldn't just hang with this guy
mm-hmm.
on the backyard barbecue. But I was in my, 50s when that happened. It took me a long time.
Yeah, and so, Jamie, like, ultimately to keep our children safe, you know, going back to what Thomas said, you know, we've got to clean up our consciousness so that we're not attracting, you know, all that negative stuff. And, you know, our daughter's getting ready to go away to college. The kind of the fear and the insecurities coming up for me, I'm cleaning them up, which means I'm forgiving them so that I'm not creating situations for her, negative situations for her out of my fear.
Absolutely.
And then I would say, you know, and then, like, have honest conversations, you know, with your daughter about trusting her intuition, about not just going off with people she doesn't know, like, really looking for signs of maybe an abusive behavior. Like, have, you know, so that she knows what she's looking for and knows what she's not interested in, and then, you know, talk to her about mirroring also so that she's cleaning up her consciousness so that she's not attracting that kind of energy.
Touche, absolutely. And the last thing I'd like to say to Jamie is once you've cleaned up yourself, then invite your child in to have a two-way conversation about healthy boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And what you guys can work out together is this is fair, this is not, and so that she has an input on it and you have an input on it and work it out together and take it from there.
Yeah, because just like doing a blanket no or being afraid is going to create the exact opposite of what you want.
Yeah.
So thank you, Jamie in Chicago.
Already
yeah.
52 or 3.
Lisa in Miami. You want to read that? Okay.
Lisa in Miami. I'm concerned that my 13-year-old son is looking at things he shouldn't be on the internet mostly. As a single mom with no father figure in place, I am finding communication in this department so, so challenging. Do you have any advice on how to deal with this?
Well, what I would say, he's 13, you know, parental controls. I'm assuming that he's at home alone, maybe a lot. So just on a practical level, you know, you can do parental controls on the phone and on the computers at home. So that would minimize it. And, you know, I get that it's uncomfortable. And, there's books, though, that talk about healthy sexuality for kids.
Mm-hmm.
What is the name of that? Oh, gosh. There was a great book. Let me see if I can find it.
All right, I'll talk while you're looking for that. The other thing, something that I would say is there are some really wonderful stars, singers now. And what's the one I'm trying to think of? She sings a very soft voice.
Billie Eilish?
Billie Eilish has come out and publicly said that she wished that she had never looked on the internet at some of those interactions because it ruined for her the whole idea of getting into a serious relationship, the romantic part of it, and just being with someone before it gets to another level.
Mm.
And that's very powerful for somebody with that status to share.
Yeah. So, Mecca, do you have the name of that sexuality book that we got you years ago?
It's So Amazing.
Oh, yeah. What's the full title, though?
I don't know where it is.
Oh, yeah. So there's a book. It's called It's So Amazing, something, something, something. But we got, years ago, we got Mecca, the younger version, but they actually have a teen version. And it's just this wonderful, straightforward book about sexuality. And so I get that it's uncomfortable. Maybe if you have a male figure you trust that you're comfortable with, you know, I would suggest, you know, getting this book or finding some book and having either yourself or this male figure, maybe you have a brother or something, talk to them because, you know, what they're seeing on the internet can definitely skew their whole perception of what sexuality is, what intimacy is. So, and there's a lot of stuff out there. So I would, you know, suggest like getting one of these healthy books that actually has accurate information, reading it yourself, and then if you're not comfortable, at least giving it to your son, and then finding someone that can actually talk to him about healthy sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I get emails from a woman who's a sex therapist. I cannot think of her name. But there are also professionals out there who are dealing with adolescent sexuality in a powerful and supportive way. So that's what I would suggest, Lisa, in Miami. Thank you, Lisa, and thank you, Jamie.
Might be time to wrap it up.
I think it's probably, we're close to the hour. Let's see if we have any other questions.
It's been a great conversation. We really appreciate you emailing in questions, statements, opinions. It's an interesting time in navigating life with all the different energies going on. And particularly with our children, which we love so deeply, it's sometimes we question ourselves and we're all just trying to work this out. And we're talking to you what has worked great for us. And that's all I can say about it right now.
Yeah, so I have two books to help you on your parenting journey, 21 Lessons to Empower the New Age Kid. It's a cutting-edge workbook for today's adolescents. And the lessons are short and easy to use and follow. That's 21 Lessons to Empower the New Age Kid. And then Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid is a family labor of love. And we share our endearing and engaging stories of parenting, life, and the lessons we've learned over 15 years. And so what I love about this book is Mecca actually wrote 5 stories in it. You wrote 1 story, but you did all the illustrations.
I did.
So it's an amazing family resource. It's not telling you how to do something or what to do. It's sharing our experience of raising our amazing New Age daughter and, you know, the healing that we've gone through so that we can be supportive of her journey.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid, 21 Lessons.
And the book is also great for just opening up conversations.
Absolutely.
With her children, even awkward conversations. You can leave the book out, and then maybe they'll find a story that interests them, and that'll open a conversation that way.
Very good point. And so I also have 2 workshops to support you on your conscious parenting journey, Passionate Parenting in This New Age, 3 Mistakes Even Conscious Parents Make That Create Power Struggles, Stress, and Anxiety, and DIY Mindfulness for Tweens and Teens. And go to my website on the Courses Books page to register for these life-changing classes. My books are available on Amazon. We've come to the end of our show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes.
Thank you, Thomas and Mecca, for being here with me today.
We love you. We support you, conscious parents.
The Conscious Parenting Show is live the second Friday of each month at 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on News for the Soul Radio. Please visit the News for the Soul archives for more enlightening shows. Tell all your friends, and for more information about me, visit my website at sandrajoneskeller.com. Until next time, happy, happy parenting.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.